This is the Preservation Technology Podcast, bringing innovation to preservation. The Preservation Technology Podcast is a production of the National Center for Preservation Technology and Training, a unit of the National Park Service.
My name is Catherine Cooper. I'm here with...
I'm Gail Kuramiya. I'm the third oldest daughter of Yosh Kuramiya, who is the author of the book that we'll be discussing.
And I'm Art Hansen, and I'm the editor of the book that we'll be discussing. And I'm a retired professor in history and Asian American studies at California State University at Fullerton.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for joining me today. Could you talk about why it was so important to have Mr. Kuramiya's memoir, Beyond the Trail, published and made available to the greater public?
Well, if you look in the appendix of the book, you'll see that Dad made a lot of appearances at conferences, universities, high schools, and whatnot, sharing his history of being a draft resister during World War II. He really wanted to get the story out to people who are interested, in particular Japanese Americans and the younger generation. And he's actually hoping that that generation will spread the news. He felt the Japanese American community itself needed to clean its own house first and to kind of acknowledge what happened during the war, because it wasn't often shared from generation to generation. Thankfully, that's changing now. But he wanted to acknowledge what happened and learn from it and understand our own responsibilities for what happened.
And from my perspective, I think Yosh Kuramiya's memoir is exceedingly important, because although there were 300 plus draft resistors from the War Relocation Authority camps during World War II, this is the only book-length memoir. There have been articles written, including ones by Yosh himself, but this is the only one. And most of the resistors have passed away. So this was something that was exceedingly important. It was important to me, too, because since 1972, when I started studying the Japanese-American World War II experience, I have focused my attention on resistance activities by the Japanese-Americans themselves, not people who did things for the Japanese Americans, ministerial people and the like, but actually the Japanese Americans themselves. They had been depicted as being passive and not taking control of the situation and not defending their civil rights and their human dignity. In fact, I have found out that they did. And so I wanted to showcase those kinds of stories. And so I think this is a very important story that is emblematic of this whole idea of self-representation of the wartime experience.
But I was the one who was probably most interested in Dad's work all along, from the time he got involved in the early 90s, actually. He would send me printed copies of the talks he gave. But as a daughter, it was a juggling act. Some of the challenges were just dealing with internal family dynamics. Dad himself was pretty darn stubborn. And in some ways, he was his own worst enemy, because obviously as a resistor, he had really strong beliefs and opinions. And as a daughter, that balance of power was a little different. A lot of good came out of that as well. My sisters and I all live far apart, so that was a bit of a challenge. And this was all when we were working on the first family version. Communication, it was pretty constant. That was one of the good things that came out of it, but that was also sometimes a challenge.
In my case, to give it some context, I met Yosh Kuramiya in 1995 in a conference that was held in Wyoming. It focused upon the topic of remembering Heart Mountain. And it was a big conference and everything. And I met him standing in line waiting for some lunch together. And I was immediately struck by what a remarkable person he was. And we just really hit it off. And we had some very good common ground. And then years later, when Yosh wrote his first draft of his memoir, he picked three people to read it and to provide some commentary on it. And I was one of the three. And I told him that I thought he should consider getting it published by a university press. And I mentioned two presses, one the University of Washington Press and the other the University Press of Colorado. And the reason was because both of those presses dealt with a hybrid audience, not just academics, but also a general audience as well. And I thought this was a story that needed to get beyond academia and out to the larger public. He was able to tell a very powerful one. And then I didn't hear much about it again till years later when I was contacted by Alas and Anada, who has written the poetic forward and the poetic afterward to the book as it's published by the University Press of Colorado. And he said, Art, I have been working with the Coromia daughters on a family history that Yosh has produced, and I would like maybe to have you help in some way. And I think he was suggesting that I might write an introduction or something for this family book. And so I got a copy of the family book, and it was very good. And as I read it and everything, I said, you know, this book needs to be out in public, and it needs to be something that a lot of people can read, no matter if they live in the United States or wherever they live, they need to read this book. And so then this started some problems for me, because I decided I would like to be able to edit this, but there were a couple of problems. One, apparently Yosh had proceeded with submitting his memoir for publication consider with the University of Washington Press, and the University of Washington Press had turned it down. One of the so-called anonymous readers of it remained anonymous, but the other one became known to me, and it was somebody that was very important to studying the draft resistance, which was Eric Muller, the professor of law at the University of North Carolina. And Eric Muller wrote a book called Free to Die for Their Country, and it was all about the resistors during World War II. And so I decided that I would like to see the evaluation that Eric Muller wrote of the book. So Coromia family, Gail in particular, sent it to me. And when I read it, I could see why Eric was positive about the book, but at the same time, he had reservations, and he had 14 different points that he raised about factual mistakes that Yosh had inadvertently made. And so I felt that one of the things I had to do was to provide a firewall to these errors that he had made. So in my end notes, I was able to hitchhike off of Eric Muller's critique that he did for the University of Washington Press and plug in his comments and his objections to what he had said. So that was one of the big challenges and everything. And the second big challenge was that Yosh Coromia was very infatuated with a book that came out. And this book by Robert Stinnett, and the title of the book was Day of Deceit, The Truth About FDR and Pearl Harbor. And this was a book that was very controversial. In a sense, it said that Roosevelt knew when other people didn't that Pearl Harbor was going to be attacked, and he let it be open to attack because this provided a backdoor for the United States getting into war against the Nazis and against the fascists in Italy. And so that was the premise of the book, and Yosh believed that this was the case. And so when editing it, I had to go through many, many book reviews of that book by diplomatic historians and everything and get a sense. And I was able to show in this 2 pages long endnote that there were people, for instance, that supported what Yosh supported about this conspiracy of Roosevelt and this dastardly act of Roosevelt. And then there were many other people who were reviewers of it that felt that he had not proved his thesis, that he had a warm barrel, but not really sort of a shooting gun. The other challenge I had was that a good friend of mine and a superb historian at the University of California, Diane Fujino, whose mother I knew very well, Mae Fujino, when both of us worked at the Japanese American National Museum, she had put a lot of time into putting forth the manuscript that was submitted to the University of Washington Press. And so I didn't want to proceed with this unless I had Diane Fujino's blessing. And she is one of the most gracious and nicest women, and she willingly said, Art, go ahead with it. I was willing to take it to a second university press, but Yosh was not. He said, I'm old at this particular point. All I want to do is to get this book out, and I'll get it out as a family book. Anyway, those were the main challenges that I had as an editor. Otherwise, there wasn't much of a challenge at all. It was a great opportunity. Yeah, I was working with great people.
There's a lot of other people he didn't name that were really important to him, but primarily it was Alas and Anada, who Art mentioned, retired professor and former poet laureate from Oregon State. He's the one who kind of connected Art with the family. Martha Nakagawa is a journalist in Los Angeles and close friend of both my dad and my stepmother. Art, of course, is without him, this would probably be sitting on a shelf somewhere in the family version format. And And of course, he acknowledged his daughters. My oldest sister is a retired professional graphic designer. She did the original layout for the family version, which was retained for the final. My next oldest sister, Sharon from New York, was Dad's editor from the very beginning when he first started sending us files. And in the final version, when we were working with the University of Colorado, she was the one who tracked down all the images that we had used in the family version to verify that we had permission and copyrights and all that kind of stuff. And although all of us are graphic designers, all of Dad's four daughters, we weren't real familiar with the whole final publishing process. Design and layout is one thing, but all that technical stuff is beyond us. And then my youngest sister, she's the only one of us who's still working. So her involvement was minimal in the beginning, but she provided a lot of emotional support for all of us. And then Dad acknowledged his second wife, Irene, who is not only his wife, but his personal assistant, his typist, secretary, driver, groomer, all those things. And I would add a lot of other people, but my mother, I would add, family cheerleader and supporter and all around good sport. My husband, Paul, for being so patient since this became my retirement job, essentially. And then a lot of other people.
In most cases, the things that have come out on Japanese Americans have not put a premium upon the resistance of Japanese Americans themselves to their unjust incarceration during World War II and their pauperization, really, as well as anything else. Loss of property, but also the loss of personal dignity and civil rights and the sense of being an American. I think that this adds to the array of other books that have come out that have focused on this resistance by Japanese Americans themselves. But the main narrative before was essentially that Japanese Americans were so desperate to be able to affirm their American citizenship that they would do anything that was necessary. Their attitude was, this is our government, right or wrong. And therefore, many of them gladly decided that when they had the opportunity to be able to be drafted into the military, they said yes. And then they became part of the great 442nd Battalion, and it's one of the most decorated units ever in American military history. And I think that's what the American public wanted to hear. The fact that no matter what you do to people, America is so important that you would never hold them for account. And I think what the resistors did and what Yosh does in his book is to hold not only the United States government to account, right up through the President of the United States, but also to hold into account the leadership of the Japanese American Citizens League, because they were corroborators with the U.S. government in the incarceration of their own population. I think to have somebody like Yosh Kurumiya, they would like to look at him as being unpatriotic, when in fact, his whole act was patriotic. He believed in the Constitution of the United States, and we need to live up to that. And that's what he tried to do, along with the other resistors of conscience, is to make the United States live up to that. So it was exceedingly important.
The overall interaction I had with my father through this whole process. Actually, he had been writing all through the years of his public speaking, and he told me that he had always intended on consolidating those writings in some kind of format. But I asked him at one point, when my two boys were young, to document all these stories and these experiences that he had gone through for his kids, grandkids, and future generations. And a lot of his friends and colleagues encouraged him as well with his writings and his appearances. So Dad came up with this idea to make it a cooperative family project, which I don't believe we've ever done before in our family. But we all had our own families and we were living in different parts of the country. And his hope was that it would kind of increase and improve our communication, which it did for me. And so in 2010, he sent me his first chapter out of the book. And one thing I do want to mention is that once he had his manuscript where he was comfortable with it and we had done the family version, he was adamant that nothing be changed. changed from his original manuscript through all the publishing process. And other than grammatical errors and things like that, Art, to his credit, maintained that. The final book that people read are Dad's words. So from 2010 until Dad died in 2018, constant phone calls with Dad, conversations that I probably never would have had the opportunity to have with him because it went beyond his experiences during the war as a resistor and all the stuff surrounding that before they went into the camps, afterwards, my childhood, that type of thing. And of course, not all of that is in the book because it's not a tell-all book, but it was really valuable and it got harder and harder because Dad started losing his hearing and that made it really difficult. He didn't use the computer, so I have all his longhand written notes. I took notes when I talked to him on the phone, which I'm kind of going through now and coming up with these little pearls of stories that I would not have known had I not been having this ongoing conversation with him. So that was the primary memory, I guess, of going through this whole process. And even though the book itself is quite an accomplishment, I think, for all of us, I still think that the phone calls are what I will cherish the most out of this experience, because a lot of Nisei dads are not typically very talkative about their personal feelings and emotions. But I think through this process, Dad got more and more comfortable sharing that type of stuff. So that was a real positive that came out of it.
In my case, I just have one story that I'd like to relate. It has to do with Yosh's widow, Irene Koromea. And when this edited version of the manuscript was being considered to be published by the University Press of Colorado, Irene had registered a protest, and it came to me, and it hurt me a lot because I regard and still regard Irene as a very close and dear friend of mine. She said, Art Hansen, he was sent the manuscript by Yosh years ago, and he didn't even read it. He didn't even say anything about it, which was absolutely untrue. Not only did I read it, I wrote about a 7 or 8 page critique of it, including even a copy editing a section to it. And somebody reminded her of that fact, and I think she somehow or other had blanked on it. What she was upset about more than anything is she felt that what Yosh wanted really was not a published book, but just the family edition for family and friends. That's all he wanted. And I had to, in a sense, go against that and look about by talking to Gail in particular to find out at bottom what he wanted. He might have said, I want just the family edition, but he really wanted something that would get out to a much larger group so that this important story of not just himself, but the story of himself in relationship to the draft resistance movement would become public knowledge. And then almost to the end, Irene still wanted this, but I think she came to the event that we had at the Japanese American National Museum when we had the first book event for the thing. And I think she was very gracious at that event. And I think you could tell that she was bubbling with pride. She loved her husband so much and was so proud of it and her own involvement in it. But I think all of the other stuff was washed away.
Dad, he wanted to present it as a personal account. He didn't want it to be an academic document. And he did want to get it out to the public. But at the same time, I think he had a mistrust of commercial printing process. But one of his themes that he was trying to get across in the memoirs, and we talked about this before he passed, was the role of the Issei, which are his parents who immigrated here from Japan. So he attributes a lot of his decisions as being influenced by my grandfather and the morals and integrity he had. But overall, I think the takeaway from the book is included in Kirsten Lyon's kind of condensed review on the back of the hardcover version. And I believe it's a quote out of Dad's text. And it reads, what is a citizen's rightful response to constitutional transgressions? What indeed is a citizen's responsibility when racially based civil rights restrictions are imposed by an errant government? And I think that kind of sums up the gist of it, even though Dad always told me that he didn't intend this to be a portrayal of him as a resistor, because he said even though that was a pivotal decision in his life, it wasn't his entire life. And that's why he insisted on including all of the rest of his life in the book as well.
I think that the major takeaway of Yosh's book has been expressed nicely by Gail in that quote that she read. Actually, another important thing that I'd like them to take away is Yosh's entire life, not just his time in camp or in prison, et cetera, or fighting for the rights of the resistors against the JCL and others after the war, but really to see his entire life. It's a tribute to not just his acts, but to the man himself, the character, the deep and abiding character of that particular person.
Thank you both so much. This was wonderful.
Well, thanks.
Thank you so much, Catherine.
This was a presentation of the Preservation Technology Podcast, produced by the National Center for Preservation Technology and Training. To find more podcasts like this one, please visit our website,